Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
This is Basketball History 101 with Rick Loaiza.
Welcome back to award-winning Basketball History 101, part of the Sports History Network. I am your host, Rick Loaiza, and this is a podcast where we bring to life some of the forgotten stories from basketball history. We are bringing old-school basketball to a new-school audience. And today we bring you the story of Dennis Johnson. He was the point guard of two Celtics championships during the Larry Bird days. Now, specifically, he was the point guard for the 1984 and 1986 championships. He also won a championship with the Seattle Supersonics in 1979 and was the finals MVP for that one. He was a 9-time all-defensive player and a 5-time all-star. He was even voted first team all-NBA in 1981. That means that he was voted as one of the top 5 players in the entire league for that season. Dennis Johnson is a player who can stack his accomplishments against almost any other player in league history and hold his own. He was deservingly enshrined into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame in 2010. Unfortunately, that was 3 years after he had passed away, so he did not get to see that honor. However, he does deserve to be considered one of the great players of this game. He was that good. But he was also an underdog. Now, if we get into a time machine and go back to the 1970s, when he was still in high school, he would have been the last player that anyone would have thought could actually make it in the NBA, let alone become an All-Star and Hall of Famer. He was the shortest guy on the team, and I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself here, so let me take us all the way back to his birth on September 18, 1954, and he was born in San Pedro, California, but raised in Compton. Dennis Johnson was the 8th of 16 children in his family. His mother was a social worker and his father was a bricklayer. Young Dennis showed interest and skill as a baseball player and then later fell in love with basketball. And he went on to play at Dominguez Hills High School, but he was only 5'9" or 175 centimeters. He almost never saw the court unless it was a blowout. Any college coach who had come to see a game would not have even thought twice about Dennis Johnson, as in many games, he never even got off the bench. When he played, it was maybe for a minute or two of garbage time. A college coach would surely be focused on the starters, the guys who were actually out there playing the game. And even as a senior, he barely played. So after high school, he went and found a job driving a forklift, as well as doing other odd jobs. He had no interest in going to college, and he was done with school as far as he was concerned. So for him, it was time to get to work and start making some money. He also played a lot of pickup basketball at the park. As luck would have it, one day he was playing pickup at an outdoor court when a coach happened to come by. That coach's name was Jim White, and he was the head coach at Los Angeles Harbor College, which was a community college in LA, and he really liked the way Dennis played and inquired about his status. Now, Dennis Johnson was the epitome of a late bloomer. He graduated high school at a height of 5'9", as I mentioned before, but by the time he was noticed on that outdoor court in LA, he had grown to 6'3", or 191 centimeters. He had also developed springs for legs and was snatching rebounds away from taller opponents. He had everything that a college coach could want. So Johnson accepted Coach White's offer and enrolled at LA Harbor College and joined the basketball team, and he excelled. It was like he had been given a brand new body since graduating high school. It was like a Captain America moment. His short, scrawny body went inside that super soldier machine and came out with the body of a future basketball Hall of Famer. That new body was taller, stronger, faster, could jump higher, and he took advantage to push himself forward into being an elite player. He averaged 18 points and 12 rebounds at Harbor and led them to a California State Junior College Championship. He transformed himself into a sought-after recruit, but things were not always so rosy at Harbor College. Dennis was a very strong and opinionated person about how the game should be played and how to attack the opponent. Sometimes his opinions differed from that of the coach. In his 2 years at Harbor College, he was thrown off the basketball team 3 times. That reputation of being difficult would follow him later into the NBA. Now, regardless, after 2 years of a dominant playing career at Harbor College, he accepted an offer to play at Pepperdine University in Malibu, California. Now, Johnson only played at Pepperdine for 1 year, where he averaged 16 points, 6 rebounds, and 3 assists per game. He had also developed himself into a top defender. He was always assigned to guard the other team's best perimeter player, and he dominated in that defensive role. So, with that, he entered his name into the 1976 NBA draft. He was not sure that he would actually get drafted because his reputation as a troublemaker was already well known to NBA general managers. Nonetheless, he was chosen in the second round of the draft by the Seattle Supersonics. He had made it to the NBA. For a kid who barely played in high school, this was quite an accomplishment. So, this is a good place to take a break, and I'll be right back with Dennis Johnson's NBA career.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
At the Sports History Network, we're all about sports yesteryear, and so we're so pleased to introduce you to Row One, an online memorabilia gallery and shop that brings your sports history to life anywhere. The Row One gallery includes over 5,200 gorgeously reproduced prints of team posters, game program covers, game tickets, advertisements, and more in baseball, pro and college football, pro and college basketball, and more. And any gallery item may be printed in a variety of sizes on wood, metal, canvas, acrylic, or poster paper. And in Row One shop, check out the thousands more of you unique items with a retro and historical designs dating back to 1876, including t-shirts, long sleeve shirts, phone cases, mugs, blankets, pillows, towels, and even shower curtains. Go to sportshistorynetwork.com, ROW number one, for access to the full Row One catalog and for gallery prints and gift items. Plus get a 15% discount off all prints on the Row One Pictorum Gallery with coupon code SHN15. Follow the link on the show notes.
Hello, sports history fans. I'm Ross from the podcast Pigskin Tales. You're about to jump into another thrilling sports history moment, but first, let's dive into today's sponsor, just in time for the holiday season. Introducing Art of Words, the brainchild of word artist Dan Duffy from Philadelphia. Dan meticulously crafts stunning images by handwriting relevant words from some of the greatest sports moments in time. These unique, budget-friendly illustrations are the perfect gift, sparking cherished memories and capturing hearts. Choose from city skylines, sports, history, and musicians to find a piece for everyone. And here's the exciting part. For that sports fanatic in your life, gift them a piece of their favorite team or player's history. Art of Words tells a compelling story. Explore collegiate stadiums, each meticulously crafted with every football victory etched into words. Or venture into baseball stadiums, handwritten with every player from the team's illustrious history. My favorite on the site is Bryce Harper 2021 MVP year. Because I'm a big stats guy, I think that's one of the coolest things ever. Check it out. Don't wait. Order a print today for yourself and your loved one this holiday season. Transform your wall into a gallery of captivating art and surprise your family and friends with a print of their own. Use code SHN15 at artofwords.com for a 15% discount on your order in November and December. Visit Art of Words, where words magically transform into stunning art, evoking cherished memories and touching the hearts of those who you care about. Again, use the code SHN15 for 15% off at artofwords.com.
Welcome back to the show, and let us continue with the story of Dennis Johnson. He had developed a reputation as uncoachable. His first NBA head coach was the great Bill Russell. He was drafted onto a team that had a good pair of starting guards in Slick Watts and Downtown Freddie Brown. Johnson would come off the bench and contribute 9 points, 4 rebounds, and 1 assist per game. Now, during his second season, he upped those numbers slightly to 13 points, 4 rebounds, and 3 assists per game. However, the team was floundering. The Sonics had a ton of talent, but were underperforming. And Bill Russell was fired. His replacement, Bob Hoskins, was also fired. And then Hall of Fame player and Hall of Fame coach Lenny Wilkins stepped in. Now, Wilkins was only a coach at this point, having retired from playing a few years earlier. But with Wilkins as the head man, one of his first decisions was to move Dennis Johnson to the starting shooting guard spot, alongside point guard Gus Johnson. As a starter in his third season, his numbers jumped up to 16 points, 5 rebounds, and 4 assists per game. He also made the All-Star game for the first time in his career. He was now a legitimate star in the NBA. As a shooting guard, he was known for his ferocious dunks, and Seattle won their only championship that year over the Washington Bullets in the 1979 NBA Finals. Now, after another year in Seattle, he was shipped off to the Phoenix Suns. Now, nobody could deny that Johnson was a great player. He was a top-flight shooting guard and an elite defender. However, he continued to clash with Wilkins, just as he had with almost every coach that he had ever had. Seattle began to think of Johnson as more trouble than he was worth. And he spent 3 years in Phoenix. He went to 2 more All-Star games and put up great numbers, but again, he was often clashing with head coach John McLeod. At this point, everyone in the league knew that Johnson was a great player, but also a troublemaker. And this is where Red Auerbach of the Boston Celtics enters the story. He viewed Dennis Johnson differently. He felt that Johnson had not been utilized correctly. What Auerbach saw was a player who wanted to win so badly that his emotions often got the better of him as he clashed with his previous coaches. He felt that a guy like Johnson was exactly what the Boston Celtics needed, and Auerbach was intent on playing Johnson as the point guard, since he already had a solid shooting guard in Danny Ainge. So Auerbach made another one of his patented lopsided trades where he gave up very little and received back a whole lot more. Auerbach sent Rick Roby and a couple of draft picks to Phoenix in exchange for Dennis Johnson. Once Johnson arrived in Boston in the autumn of 1983, he found what he had been looking for. He got along with all of his teammates and he loved Coach Casey Jones. Johnson was going to play point guard for the Celtics and he was surrounded with weapons. He had Larry Bird, Kevin McHale, and Robert Parrish as his front court, and he had Danny Ainge alongside him as his other backcourt mate. Johnson was in basketball heaven. Instead of being the slam-dunking shooting guard like a Michael Jordan or a Kobe Bryant type player, he was now the classic point guard, running the offense and distributing the ball to his teammates, like a John Stockton or Isaiah Thomas. It was the perfect fit for him, especially as he was getting older. In Johnson's first year with the Celtics, they went 62-20 and defeated the Lakers in 7 games in the NBA Finals. According to guys like Ainge and Bird, Dennis Johnson was never a distraction while he played in Boston. They knew about his previous reputation and they did not understand it. What they saw was a teammate who just loved to win and did everything that he was asked of and more. And he played incredible defense against the other team's guards. Now, this is the part of basketball that absolutely fascinates me. Sometimes there's a situation where a player flounders or underperforms or causes trouble, but then you put that same player on a different team, and it is like they are transformed into this completely different player. I believe that situations matter, and who the coach is matters, and who the teammates are matters. I mean, just take a look at Jimmy Butler. The Bulls got rid of him, then the Timberwolves got rid of him, then the 76ers got rid of him. But in Miami, they love him and he fits in perfectly with their system. In that same way, the Celtics were the perfect situation for Dennis Johnson. In 1986, the Celtics did it again, going 67-15 during the regular season and just steamrolling everybody to the 16th championship in team history. He continued to play for 4 more years, but then retired at the end of the 1990 season as his skills were diminishing and he had to come off the bench for 10 games that season. With many of the Celtics greats, and Johnson is one of the Celtics greats, there is usually a job available to that player within the Celtics organization. And true to form, Auerbach offered Johnson a position as a scout for the team. Now that later turned into a position as an assistant coach. Now his time with the Celtics ended when he was arrested for aggravated assault against his own family. Now eventually those charges were dropped and Johnson sought counseling to help him manage his behavior. Now, after a couple of years away from basketball, he bounced around with the Portland Trail Blazers and Los Angeles Clippers, and then made his way to the G League. He was named the head coach of the Austin Toros in 2005. By all accounts, he did a wonderful job, and he hoped that it would turn into a head coaching position with the NBA. But sadly, on February 22nd, 2007, he collapsed from a heart attack during a Toro's training session. He was rushed to the hospital, but the doctors were not able to save him. His passing was a shock to the NBA because it was so unexpected. He was only 52 years old at the time. Danny Ainge called him one of the most underrated players of all time and one of the great Celtics acquisitions. Even Bill Laimbeer, the hated enemy from the Bad Boys Pistons, called Dennis Johnson a great player on a great team. Today, his jersey number 3 hangs in the rafters at the Boston Garden, and Johnson was the player who made one of the most clutch layups of all time. It was Game 5 of the 1987 Eastern Conference Finals between the Boston Celtics and the Detroit Pistons. The Celtics were down by 1 point with 17 seconds left in the game. They were going for a last second shot. Bird had his layup blocked, but then the ball went out of bounds off of Danny Ainge. It was Pistons' ball with just 5 seconds left. Isaiah Thomas sprinted over to inbound the ball before the Celtics could set up their defense. He wanted to run out those last 5 seconds and secure the victory. Now, at that point in the series, it was tied 2 games apiece, so the winner of this particular game would go up 3-2 and have a solid hold in the series. Thomas inbounded the ball toward Bill Laimbeer, but Larry Bird, watching everything that was happening, stepped in front of Laimbeer and stole the ball. He quickly passed it to a cutting Dennis Johnson for the layup and a 1 point lead with just 1 second left on the clock. The Pistons were not able to do anything with that 1 second, and the Celtics walked away with the win and a lead in the series. And several nights later, they would close it out in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals. And that was probably the biggest moment of his career. Let's take a listen.
On the left, it goes to Bird. Bird guarded by Mahorn. Drives around him. Goes on in. Ball gets knocked out of bounds by Ainge. Oh, they call it the other way. And now there's a steal by Bird. Underneath the DJ, lays it in. Right at 1 second left. What a play by Bird. Bird stole the inbounding pass. Laid it up to DJ. DJ laid it up and in. And Boston has a 1 point lead with 1 second left.
In the end, the kid who barely played for his high school team ended up in the Hall of Fame and his number retired by the Boston Celtics. He had one of the great careers in NBA history. Well, that is all for our story on Dennis Johnson. Join us next time when we share the story of the one punch rule from the NBA of the 1970s. Basically, the rule said that a player could have one punch against an opponent and still stay in the game. Now come back next week to hear that one. That's next time on Basketball History 101, part of the Sports History Network, the headquarters of Sports Yesteryear. Go to sportshistorynetwork.com to find out more about this and other sports history podcasts. If you like what you hear, please hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts, and check out our page on Facebook. It's called Basketball History 101 Podcast. There you will find shorter historical posts as well as comments and discussion starters on today's game. I'll also announce there when new episodes come out. I want to thank my producer and editor, Jacob Loaiza. Join us each week as we continue to mine the history of basketball for more great stories from the past. Take care and see you soon.